둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, for making your way here, for checking out the series. I do hope you hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. A great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover the new ones anywhere you get your podcasts from, including Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And please do give the series a rating and leave a review as well. Some great guests have dropped by lately, including Jacob Bertram from the show Cobra Kai. Nikki was here, Robert Plants, Dave Mustaine of Megadeth, director Paul Feig. He's got the new John Cena Awkwafina movie called Jackpots on Prime. Randy Blythe of Lamb of God, David Duchovny, Weird Al Yankovic, Samantha Morton, Reggie Watts, Adam Duritz of the Counting Crows, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, catching up with Dave Navarro. He is back once again, reunited with Jane's Addiction. They have new singles out, Imminent Redemption and True Love. We're going to talk about the reunion. And so it's the whole thing is they've reunited plenty in the past, but this is the first time that they're back with the original bassist, Eric Avery, and making new music with him in, over 30 years now. So, well, we're going to begin the conversation by talking about his interest in World War II documentaries and archaeology, alien civilizations, before we buckle down and we get into the brass tacks, discussing those new singles, why they're only playing songs from the first three albums on the tour. We'll hear about his distaste for seeing fans holding up phones to the entire shows, walking away from playing after Taylor Hawkins passed away, and having Steely Dan's music actually be the thing that brought him back. I'll ask why he's never done a second solo album, and he'll tell us about being more experimental with Avery back in the mix. We'll hear about the Velvet Underground's influence on the band, and how distractions really have kept him unfocused for the past 20 years. It's a great conversation. It's one of my favorites. I always love talking with Dave, so let's jump into it. To discuss these new singles, Imminent Redemption and True Love, it's Kyle Meredith with Dave Navarro of Jane's Addiction.
Hey, man. How are you? Oh, I like that room. Look at that. Look at that place you're in.
I just try to keep it way cooler than I could ever be behind me.
That's what I try and do. You know what I mean? Like, it kind of looks like the Nosferatu's lair in here.
That's great. Yeah, well, otherwise you get this very generic white guy face.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I just stay home and watch documentaries about World War II and Vietnam, and you know, like I'm not on the Ouija board, and I'm not you know, but anyway.
But that room makes it look like you might be on the Ouija board. That's right. Yeah.
Creates the illusion. No, I appreciate the mutual respect for the environments that we share, because the environment has a lot to do with our mental, emotional capabilities and capacities and just comfortability. So
especially when you've got a your personality. It's there's a myth. If you want to perpetuate it or not, you have that choice.
But I think, by talking about it like this, aren't I not perpetuating it? See what I'm saying?
Right. That's what
I'm dispelling. I'm actually doing the contrary.
Do you want to dispel it?
I care less. Dude, I'm 57. I've been playing for so long, days of mystique are out the window. You know, it's interesting. You just said consequence of sound.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking. Sound has consequences.
Sure.
I put on Dark Side of the Moon, and I'm like, I enter a portal into some other dimension of beauty and freedom and colors and feelings and emotions and depth. But if there's a gardener outside with one of those electric blowers with the leaves, that's making a sound too, right? But I want to scratch my eyes out. So that would be a consequence of sound,
mm-hmm.
as far as I'm concerned. I think well, in the context we're talking about, it's the gift of sound.
Much more of a positive thing is what we're getting at here. Yeah.
Well, yeah. The consequence of it, like, the guy's blowing leaves instead of sweeping them up, like a guy with real work ethic, he's blowing it around. It's not going anywhere.
You're not a fan of the leaf blower, is what we're getting to here too.
I'm just using it as an example. It's a metaphor.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to walk over it. Please continue.
I know a guy's got to make a living. I don't have any problem with that. But this is nothing against the leaf blower community. I'm just saying the consequence is you wake up early, and that's what I think of when I think of consequence of sound.
Sure.
I think of the house that's getting built across the street, and they start at 6 a.m. They're just hammering and trucks and I think it might be a nice idea to change the site and the entire organization to
all of it.
The gift of sound that we actually enjoy.
So two things real quick. As far as I remember, they named it after a Regina Spektor lyric. Is where the consequence of sound phrase comes from.
It should have been music, consequence of marrying that guy.
and two, I'm nearly 1,000 episodes into this series, so I think at this point I've got to lean into it. To rebrand
would be a problem. Yeah,
it'd be a problem. And only to kick a dead horse, when you said the leaf blower thing, Henry Rollins and William Shatner once did a song for Ben Folds, and in it they just go off on leaf blowers.
Oh, they do.
Yeah. Just
Shatner and Rollins?
Yeah, just...
Oh, so I'm in good company.
You're in good company. That's what I'm getting
because
at.
Because Shatner is, like, at the top of the tier of, like, the wholesome America's, dad. Everybody loves him. Rollins, hardcore underground punk rock scene. I'm just some guy, but we all share the same thing. And I don't... You know what? As a little secret... I'll bet you leaf blowers themselves hate leaf blowers outside their house when they wake up in the morning. You know what I'm thinking?
Probably true. Yeah.
The guy's going, that motherfucker outside is fucking. That's my shit. That's my shit. I wake people up.
Where's the What was that? Charlie Sheen, Emilio Estevez garbage truck movie back in the late '80s, early '90s. You know those. It's like Men at Work or something like that. Anyway,
yeah, I can't remember because I don't watch garbage like that. But go ahead.
Touche. I'm just saying, like, there's something here for the leaf blowing.
If it's not a Swedish art house film or a documentary on World War II, I haven't seen it.
Do there need to be more documentaries on World War II and World War I?
I don't think there can be enough.
Really?
First of all. In all sincerity, enough human beings died and suffered through those wars where it should be very, very apparent to everybody that we have to do what we have to do to have some fucking peace on this planet and stop killing. So, you know, that's item number one on a very human level. Item number two on a fascination level, you know, because it wasn't alive at those in those years, and so I have no idea what the climate felt like. And like to watch all this stuff go down is, you know, it's weird, man. I have this weird thing with like my soothing going to sleep material. You know what I mean? And it's usually World War II in color. You know, they got all these new things coming out all the time. And I have decided that I'm over Europe and I'm all about the Pacific.
Oh yeah, so you've went through the entirety of what you need out of that part of this.
The Europe stuff, we you know, we Hitler was a bad guy. We got it. Good. We
But
got
there's
it.
more to the story.
But you the shit that went down in the Pacific, my God. And then that's the only place that a atomic weapon was ever deployed in the world's history. I mean, it's pretty fascinating. But
So I think that's
anyway.
what I got more into, and I didn't go deep from the sounds of what you do, but like growing up a fan of Indiana Jones made me more interested in World War One.
Oh, okay.
I think because it was more mysterious and just made no sense. To this
Right.
day, it doesn't make sense. I mean, you see how it happened, but it doesn't make sense.
Just the other night, I just watched 1917, which is, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's absolutely mind-blowing. Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is that, well, I must have been about 10 years old when the first one came out, Raiders of the Lost Ark. And that got me into archaeology. And that got me into, you know, just the mysteries of this planet. And, you know, I think that and a combination of a documentary made by Eric von Daniken called The Gods, Chariots of the Gods, which is all about the UFO world and ancient civilizations being brought here by, you know, other life forms, you know, those two kind of things. Got me really into research and science and fringe science and all that kind of stuff. So my viewing is really it's really bipolar because it's either like deep, serious, heavy subjects or really dark, you know, Norwegian black and white films with subtubtitles or like 90 Day Fiancé.
Of course,
You know what I mean?
because we can tell multitudes and you need some levity in your life.
And sometimes I can't choose.
There
Oh
is a
no.
war of the 90 Day Fiancé. There is war within.
There is war within, and if they could somehow put those people in a battle, I mean, I wouldn't have any reason to leave the house, I don't think.
Think they call that Squid Games, more or less. That's
Squid
a...
Games. I didn't see that. Any
I didn't
good?
see it either.
I always just think of the Foreigner song.
Which one?
Squid Games. I can't take it anymore. Squid Games.
I was singing your name to the Macarena melody earlier with that in
Oh,
mind.
yeah.
Hey, Dave Navarro. Hi.
Hey, Dave Navarro. And there's also The Sun Will Come Out, Navarro.
Ah, nice.
There's a lot
Nice.
of them. Yeah,
Yeah.
you can make it work for you.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Dave Navarro. Here you are. You're out on the road with Janes. It's great to see you all doing your thing again. You're out there with Love and Rockets. And it's
Dude, Love and Rockets.
which you all have got so much history with. I mean, the early days you were opening, they were opening whatever it was, but Daniel
Yeah,
Ash, I mean, come on.
we toured with them in the 80s, and yeah, and actually watching Daniel Ash every night because we were opening for the band, excuse me, really had an impact on my playing. So from that era, from that year forward, I was really fascinated by playing less, leaving space, ambience, simplicity, arpeggiated melodic parts, you know, things that are repetitive and hypnotic. And I kind of came into that tour from more of a Hendrix, Clapton, Jeff Beck, Jimmy Page, Eddie Van Halen background. You know what I mean? The band got together in the late 80s and like kind of really didn't have a reason to be together because Perry was goth, Eric was punk, and Steven and I were in a speed metal band.
Right.
Right. But I think that what happened is we all looked at each other's musicianship and were fascinated by it. You know, they couldn't do the stuff that we could do, and we couldn't do the stuff that they could do. And they didn't listen to anything we listened to, and vice versa. So we would kind of exchange, check this out. This is, you know, this is Rush. And then Eric would be like, okay, check this out. This is Joy Division. And we're like, you know, it would kind of go like that. And then we all kind of found some common footing. But I think that Love and Rockets tour was like really the culmination of me like clicking, you know, and going, it's not all about shredding and proficiency and music, musicianship and, you know, music theory. It's about creating a feeling. You know what I mean? I really got a lot of that from Daniel Ash and, you know, David Gilmour. There's a number of players I could.
That was the consequence of you hearing those sounds, is what.
But see what I read. But consequence.
It's the gift that happened.
Right.
It was a consequence. You heard that, and the consequence was it changed your styles. It developed your style into even more.
Okay. The result or effect of an action or condition may have been laid off from work as a consequence of the administration's policies.
Still a negative connotation.
It has a negative connotation.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So,
uh-huh. Of course, we redefine words all the time, and I think that's what I was probably doing there. But
you were redefining it?
What gives me the rights?
I don't really know how we got on this subject because we're here to talk about music, but
I feel like if I needed to figure out how to do it, I could still work in the title "Eminent Redemption" into our and to be able to seg back over. But those words
you
are
can, you can, because I think that's what Perry's singing about on that song, with the new Jane's Addiction song "Eminent Redemption," which is now on like all the streaming platforms, and I believe there's going to be vinyl of that available because I'm a vinyl freak. I'm like, we gotta have vinyl. But yeah, he's just talking about like there's a line in the song where he says, it's not only me, we all need a little redeeming. And, you know, it is time for the world to unite and just kind of like, come on, guys, like we're only here for a short period of time. Anyway, you know, just worry about yourself, you know, take care of the people you love, be kind to others, and like, let's get on with it, you know. But so I'm simplifying his lyrics because he's such a great poet. But
and it's a hell of a track.
Thank you,
and you know, it, almost self-referential, of course. You know, it you know, there's some callback in there. Hey, here we are again, and that call to arms that you're talking about. I mean, what a great rallying cry,
yeah,
for you all to return with.
Yeah,
and
it was the only rallying cry that we all four of us could agree on.
You recorded a B-side too, though, right? Like
There's a B-side called True Love. Yeah, that's gonna, I love True Love. It's very weird. We were gonna put out Imminent Redemption on a vinyl disc. And I'm just gonna say this because it's funny. And it was just Imminent Redemption and nothing on the other side, just flat plastic. And I got the test printing and I was like, the fuck is this? Like, the idea of a record is, you know, there's two sides to it, you know, there's two sides to it. And I was like, we got the other song. Why is that not backed on this one? And they're like, well, no, we're going to put that one out later. And I go, okay, stop right there. So you're telling me that people are going to want to go to the record players, drop the needle on one song and listen to it, and then get up, take the needle off, and take that disc off, and then put another one on, and then drop the needle on that for one song, and just keep doing that for one song for, you know, like, you were talking about 3 minutes. You know, you can't even get up and get a bottle of water. And by the time you're back, you gotta change records. So I was like, no, we gotta put a B-side on this. And I don't even care if it's a sound of the song of the humpback whale. We just put something on there. You know what I mean? Put something on there. But we ended up putting True Love on there. And like, so now we're on tour, doing the US tour, and we're playing both these songs live. And, you know, they're brand new to us. They're brand new to the public. The diehard people, fans that know us and know the new song, get really stoked, and you can see their eyes widen and get, you know, really excited. And then you can see the other 2/3 of the audience kind of look like deer caught in the headlights. Like, I don't know this one. Do you guys want to go get a drink?
Then, there's always going to be that song. There's always going to be that song. I mean, what you hear Plant talking about how Stairway, for the first like 3 months they played it, everyone like went to sleep, you know, and walked away.
It's, is that true?
Yeah, that's true. It's like, because it hadn't happened yet, you know. It was the new
song.
Yeah.
Wow.
Was looking at your all set list and everything, and I'm hoping to see one of these shows. I'm planning on it, but I did notice, like, because you're just, besides the new songs, unless I'm wrong, you're only playing from the first three albums. You're not doing the two at, like, there's nothing from the 2000s.
Strays are Great Escape Artists.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we just, you know, I mean, look,
which is a choice. It's fine. It's great. Those are great songs, all of them. And I love those two albums as well. You know, that's,
well, the only choice, the only reason is because Chris Chaney wrote those songs with us, you know, and Chris Chaney, you know, poor guy, you know, now he's in AC/DC.
Poor guy.
Yeah, you know, in fact, we played Vegas the other night, and he called me afterwards. He was like, how'd the show go? And I go, it was cool, man. It was the first one back, a little rough around the edges, but, you know, it felt good. And I go, anyway, enjoy your private jet and 8 days off and sold out Wembley Arenas, motherfucker. You know what I mean? Have a great time, because I'm about to hoof it to Arizona for a 9-hour drive when you guys are just gonna, like, I mean, it's the cushiest gig you could ask for, you know. But he is, and the thing about Chris Chaney, he is just so talented. He's one of the greatest bass players I've ever met, certainly that I've ever played with, but ever even met. And he can play Jaco Pastorius, Stanley Clarke, all the way, what you name it, there's nothing he can't do. And the fact that he's now in a band where all he has to do is play EADG over and over and over in different configurations is amazing, you know. But I'm just so happy for him.
It's gonna be so hard remembering not to screw those up, which order they go in. If it's
like, I mean, it just, yeah. I mean, he's up in his room, you know, doing all this like crazy jazz technique, because he's like a actual schooled musician from Berklee School of Music, and knows how to can read music like from charts and stuff like that. And now he's going, don on on, don on on, and you're just like, it's Chris Chaney. But it's awesome, you know.
Gig's a gig, and you're playing with AC/DC. No complaints. No notes.
AC/DC. Yeah, you know? It's like. So, but the reason for not playing Great Escape Artist or Strays is that Eric wasn't a part of those, and we wanted to keep this feeling like the original 1.0 band. And those are the songs that, and, you know, frankly, Eric was the musical backbone of those records. You know, he wrote the bass lines that are the, in my opinion, the catchiest parts of the songs. The song, the parts that you sing in your head, you know, and or whatever the song may be. And, you know, so having him back, and we've had a bunch of bass players, all very gifted, competent bass players, but having the guy who wrote those songs with his energy and his size and the way his pick digs into the string and the way he pushes forward. Like, it's that the difference is insane. He's the original guy, you know what I mean? It's like, you're like, after 25 years or whatever it's been, I'm sitting on the other side of the stage going, oh, that's how this goes. I got it. Oh, now I understand. So it really feels, you know, when we're playing, like, man, it's bizarre, because when we're playing, it feels like the original days. It feels like the late 80s, early 90s, especially when we go out, just the four of us with not a ton of production, just some lights and, you know, like, keep it real simple. It's just about the music. It tends to make the show vibier and heavier and a little bit, I don't know, a little bit more, in my opinion, awe-inspiring or chill-inspiring, you know, because you're really listening to what's being said lyrically. You're really listening to the music, but, you know, and you don't have, you know, a bunch of clowns doing backflips in the behind us or whatever. So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, you got to focus, and that stuff can be distracting, you know. And a lot of bands tour with a bunch of stuff, and it's just like, man, I came here to see the band, and people are already, the one thing people forget, people are already watching the band through their phone to begin with.
At the show.
At the show.
Yeah.
With the people right there doing whatever they're doing, right? And you're looking at it on a little screen, like, I guess to save the memory or whatever it is, right? So now you're watching tiny little guys on your screen with a bunch of clowns doing backflips and fireworks and all kinds of, like, how are you going to have an emotional reaction?
And this is what you all, I just had Randy from Lamb of God on here recently, and we were talking about the same thing. And I think what he said was, because the audience doesn't consider the whole relationship, you know, like, you as the artist on the stage are feeding off of the power from the crowd. And when you look out there and you're only seeing phones, I mean, you lose something. He said, I'm just going to walk out and I'm going to sit down on a chair and I'm going to grab my phone and point it out to the crowd and I'll sing the song. He goes, and I'm going to see if you enjoy that, because I certainly don't, you know.
That's really funny. That's really funny. I have a different slant on it. Like, I see it, I don't understand it, but I go, you know what? You bought the ticket, enjoy the show however you want to. You know what I mean? You can take a paper towel roll and look through the tube at us, and if that, you know, makes you happy, so be it. You know what I mean? So I understand what he's saying, but I'm a little bit more flexible on it, because it's like, you know.
Well, I brought up Prince on that interview too. And Prince, I saw his last tour.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in Louisville. It stopped here next door at the venue. And of course, he was the whole thing. Like, you know, don't no phones until the very end. I'll let you know when to take it out. And sure enough, he does Let's Go Crazy, you know, in the idea. Let's go. He goes, get your phones out now. And he puts on, he poses the whole thing. It's like, yeah, man, I got everything I needed that day, right?
That's
there.
Kind of a genius idea.
And had the best time the rest of the show.
That's incredibly genius.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm probably going to reinvent that idea and present it as my own to the band. You know what would be a good idea? Actually, I was born on the same day as Prince.
Is that true? I probably knew that somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, June 7th. But yeah, that's cool. I mean, look, people. I posted a picture on my Instagram just a little while ago. We have VIP packages, you know, people do that, and people can, you know, they can buy an extra little something and an addendum to their ticket and go stand on the stage and watch the band on the stage, like, really be right there. And if you look at the picture, I walked over to them, right? Like, so there's the VIP roped off people who paid extra money, and I'm here playing for them, and they're all like this. Yeah. I'm 3 feet away. And so my caption was like, having a deep soul connection with everybody's phones. But like I said, you do enjoy it the way you want to enjoy it. As long as you're having a good time, I don't give a fuck. But it used to really bother me, and I just kind of got it over it.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Dave Navarro. What I appreciated, I love the sound that you all make. I love the sound the four of you all and the different incarnations. I mean, in as far as, I think the stuff you did with the Chili Peppers is the best stuff the Chili Peppers ever did. And I like
Thank
the
you.
Chili Peppers. God, Trust No One was such a great, I'm trying to tell you, I like everything that you do.
Wow, thank you.
I'm so impressed that you don't seem to have lost any of your edges. From this new song right here, the fact that you are still as heavy as you are and still able to hit that breakdown in the song and go into space, and find those moments in 3.5 minutes or whatever it is. I don't think it's 3.5. I think it's 3 minutes or,
I think it's three.
Not that there's any problem with getting older and getting folkier at all. I mean, there's, great stuff out there, but that's not you. How are you still finding the beauty in that heaviness?
I'll be honest with you. I think a lot of it has to do with years of loving the guitar and then getting sick to death of it and not touching it for a year and then hearing something inspiring and falling in love with it again and picking it up and learning something new and then getting sick to death of it. And I was playing in a band called NHC with Taylor Hawkins and Chris Chaney. And then once we lost him, I put the guitar away. I couldn't touch that thing for well over a year. And I started listening to Steely Dan in my house. And it's like, that is some weird playing. And so I started learning Steely Dan stuff, which I never really did a deep dive into, And then I just kind of got into, okay, so now I'm playing guitar every day. I'm Steely Dan, Steely Dan, Steely Dan. And then it quickly turned into Eddie Van Halen. I was like, oh, I'm just gonna go deep dive Eddie Van Halen. Everything's Van Halen. I'm reading about gear and tones and pedals and pods and outputs and this and that. And and I think so, as sad as it is to say that I have fallen in and out of love with playing, I think that once you fall back in love with it, let's fucking go. You know what I mean? If I just loved it this whole time, yeah, you'd be hearing the up close and personal acoustic album from me, where it's like, I'm gonna strip it back and get real now. You know what I mean? That's not me. We're not stripping back and getting real. We're fucking rock band. You know what I mean? This one's the most personal album I've ever done, and strip it back, just use the guitar and the voice, and tell a story. It's that simple. That's not me, dude. Because you know why? Because there are lots of books where you can just read a story. You know what I mean? So I don't need you to strip anything back to tell me a story. I could read a book, have it no soundtrack, and read a story. I don't mind the story within a sonic soundscape, but it's like, come on, let's try. Let's give it something to listen, let's balance the thing out here.
Is that part of the reason why there's never been another solo album like the Trust No One?
It's part of the reason. I think another part of the reason is that I when I got out on tour, I just don't like lead singing. I just don't like it. I can do it in the studio. I mean, serviceably, not great. I'm not some great singer, but I can do it in the studio and I guess kind of have fun with that. But once I went out touring, I was like, oh, this, I hate this.
It's not you. That's important to know who you are, though. You figured that out then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because, so I'd have another guitar player. Which is the first time that ever, that I had that. And then I had to have in-ear monitors and focus on vocal levels and all this, all this stuff and worrying about the band. I mean, the respect I gained for lead singers after doing that is immeasurable, Like all the years prior when Perry or Anthony would be complaining about this or that, and we're just And three, the band members are going, oh, prima donna, lead singer guy. Blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, you fucking go up there and try it, and then you'll know what he's talking about. And so, like, I feel just like, oh, I'm sorry, Anthony. I'm sorry, Perry. I'm sorry. This job that you have sucks, unless you're fucking gifted at it. And I'm just, I could do it, but I was not gifted at it, and nor did I enjoy it. I don't want all the eyes on me the whole show. I want to go and get lost in my instrument. That's what makes me happy. So I think that's why there was no follow-up,
When you get lost, I don't know if you'll be able to verbalize this or not, because I don't think I would know. I don't know that I'd be able to, especially in those
So
moments,
you're
those.
saying because you couldn't do something, it's likely I can't do it either?
No. I'm saying I'm trying to find the truth in the question is what I'm trying to get to when I
Okay,
say
okay.
that. Because what I'm asking is, where do you go in those moments on stage?
Oh my God. The places I go on stage, man. Sometimes it's down a melancholy road of missing my dead mother, childhood angst and pain. Sometimes it's simply me thinking about what movies should we watch on the bus tonight? Sometimes I'm completely lost in some sort of DMT journey where it's just colors and shapes and non-existence in the vessel, so to speak, where like there's some cosmic locking into the rest of the universe to which I'm such a small part of that I cease to exist. That's the part to shoot for. You're thinking about what movie to watch on the bus. You're not really giving people like, but the truth is that it's all that stuff. It's fuck, how many texts do I gotta return when I get done with the show because people had problem on the list. You know what I mean? Like the amount of shit that goes through our heads during a show is like it's crazy. You know what I mean? It's like
But that's, because from the audience point of view, and I can say this because I have seen you in those moments. Luckily, we don't know that you're thinking like what I guess I'm trying to compliment you that you do such a good job of serving the moments, this believability that we need to feel, when you're up there. So in those spacey moments when you are just, the groove is hitting and everything.
Okay, then fair enough. And I'm gonna the caveat I will make is it's multitasking.
Sure.
Because I am truly in the moment and I am connecting with the guys and I am connecting with the crowd. But I can also be like, fuck, I gotta call my dad back.
Well, especially 40 years or whatever it's been, 35 years of being on a stage all the time. At some point, there's muscle memory that will happen.
What's nice about this incarnation of Jane's Addiction and being back with Eric Avery and doing the 1.0 thing again is that it's enabling us to become very much more experimental on stage. So, for instance, we'll do 3 days and it'll be 7 minutes long, and then next night it'll be 12 minutes long. Or we'll do Kettle Whistle and it'll be 6 minutes long, or it'll be 10 minutes long. Like, we don't know. Like, there's all three of us musically are just going, fuck it, let's go to the edge of the cliff. And like, just like, if there's a train wreck, oh well, but like, let's ambient out here. You know what I mean? Let's not have a specific plan. The song doesn't have to go dun 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 dun, just like the record. You know what I mean? And that has brought a lot more of that ability to be in the moment, because musically, we sometimes don't know what we're doing. Do you know
It's
what I mean?
beautiful. Like, I
Exactly.
don't want the artist to know what they're doing.
Exactly. So every show that everybody sees is a unique experience where something has happened that no other show you're going to see it at. Because, you know, and Perry, you know, the things that he rants about and talks about in between songs, like he just pulls that shit out of thin air. You know, like a lot of singers are scripted, you know. How you doing tonight? Let me hear you, Michigan, whatever the fuck it is, right? And they got their fucking whole thing down. Perry's just like, some nights he doesn't say anything, other nights he's talking for 15 minutes. You know what I mean? And I go out and I go and I get myself a drink and, you know, wait till he's done. But it's just like, we don't know. And I think that's part of the magic, you know. And sometimes, like last night, most of the show was phenomenal. One of the greatest ever. Oh my God, this is amazing. And then towards the back half of it, it just kind of started slipping into like the mud, and we were all just kind of going, oh, this magic thing that we were feeling isn't happening anymore. Oh well, let's get through it. Wrap it up. You know what I mean? So, but what I'm saying is, you know, it's kind of like I guess in a way for us, we like the excitement of sports in a way, is because, you know, you can be having a great game and you can win it or you can lose it, you know. And so the only way to really win that thing is to stay present and focus. And if something does happen that goes wrong, let it go, you know, because I used to be like, play a song, hit a wrong sour note, like, fuck. And then the entire show, I'm in a bad mood, you know. Now it's just like, let that go. First of all, probably nobody noticed. Second of all, if they did, they're not thinking about it now. So why am I torturing myself? So that's, you know,
But again,
that's kind of.
if every show is perfect, then we're all getting the same show.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So I think in you know, I mean, I was kind of being facetious with some of the other things I would think of, although those things do cross my mind. But like in actuality, what we're talking about here, it's like my outlook on how I view the performances and the shows and the interaction between the four of us varies from day to day and from night to night, and our relationships vary from day to day and night to night, you know, and things are, you know, we have broken up 10 times, right? And there are days where I look at myself and say, no wonder we've broken up 10 times. Because we're fucking crazy. You know what I mean? Like, we've no business doing this. You know what I mean? But when it hits, it's all worth it.
So glad that you all have decided to keep going on this. And I mean that. I mean the new song, everything I would have hoped for from you guys. I hope there's more new songs. I know that's usually
Oh,
that's
there
always the
are.
funny thing, right?
You know, it's interesting, and I'll leave you this, or you know, if you want me to leave you with this, whatever. But Imminent Redemption, people are saying, oh, it sounds like old school James. It sounds like the follow-up to Ritual. Like, we're hearing a lot of that kind of feedback, which is really nice. But the weird thing about it is that it has a chorus. Boom, chorus. Because if you think of most Jane's Addiction songs, a mountain song, it's two parts. Ain't No Right, two parts. Jane Says, two parts. Stop, there's no chorus there. Been Caught Stealing, hey, all right, I get by, I guess it's mine. I guess that's a
It's more of a
chorus.
hook than a chorus.
Exactly, right? And none of our songs, we never really chorus. There's no chorus to that. You know, like very rare to find a chorus in our music. Pigs, something like that.
Never really thought about it, but yeah, you guys do more hooks than choruses. Like just because, yeah, right.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's more of a chorus because, that was a Cheney song.
Yeah, right. So I
And
went
like,
back to
so
the other
it was
side,
more
yeah.
traditional, but I'm talking more of the Avery material. Then she did, just keeps going. 3 days just keeps going. And like, this is the first Jane's Addiction song with Eric Avery where it's like, okay, get ready, folks. Here comes the chorus. Boom. You know what I mean? Like, we've never really had that.
Raise your hands and
But
sing along.
you know what I mean? So, but it works, because I think the rest of the song is simple enough that it ends up still feeling like that AB structure. It's like all in E, all in E, all in E, droning, 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 noise, 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 chorus, noise, 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 chorus, and the rest of it's all about the vocal, And that, but it is unusual for us, but people are responding to it as if it sounds like old stuff. And, I'll take it, because I hate the thinking of like, there's this old cliche that they say in studios, don't bore us, get to the chorus. You know what I mean? Which is just such a creepy
It's a
money
dumb line. It's a
grub.
horrible line. It's
It's a
horrible.
creepy
No artist feels good even when they say it, by the way. Even the
money
ones who believe that.
grubbing, like, just in search of validation and like, let's hook in the kids and milk them for merch and all. It's just like, it is so creepy. And we've never been like that. But, Perry wrote a great chorus. What can I tell you, man? So it just there it is. And the other song that's on the B side of the vinyl, True Love, and it also kind of has a chorus of its own. It's not quite as on the nose, because his choruses are there, but they're not on the nose. I think that a lot of that comes from we all had different influences as songwriters and bands that we loved, but we all agreed on the Velvet Underground, and I think that creeps in there, and that's we have that, within an equal amount of sensibility.
That makes sense. I mean, you get a song like All Tomorrow's Parties, but then you get like, Run, 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 or Who Loves the Sun, or, something like that. And it's that, yeah, it's absolutely the same thing. I can see the instant connection of the two bands.
Yeah, because it's just, even though like Venus and Furs, All Tomorrow's Parties, they do have recurring sections, it stays hypnotic. And I think that that's the one of the keys to some of our music is that there's a lot of hypnosis and repetitiveness and just kind of like getting lost in some kind of a trance, And I think Perry's very shamanistic on stage, you know what I mean? And there are times I'm looking at him. And he's supposed to be singing, and he's not singing. And I look over at him, and he's like lost up, the cosmos somewhere. And I'm like, that's fucking cool, man. I want a front guy like that.
You've done it. You've done it. Like I said, it's for you guys to be doing this far into it, and for us to still care in the same way. I mean, you know how rare that is.
Well, I appreciate that because I think that we were doing it, if I can be so bold, I really, the past 20 years or so, I don't think we've been doing it the right way. I think we've been a little bit too showbiz. I think that we've been a little too production oriented. I think that we've had too many distractions. And now that we brought the original lineup back together and really feel like what it feels like to make this music, we're like, we don't need any of that stuff that we had because this is what people cared about in 1988, and it's what they should care about now if they want to come and see us. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't. If someone says, you see the Jane's Addiction show, they had this and they had that and they had fire and they had smoke and like Rammstein, you know what I mean? Which I fucking love their production. Don't get me wrong. I'm not against production. And those guys do it fucking right. But you know what I mean? But if somebody walked away from our shows going, did you see the Ferris wheel they had with the guy? Like, I'm just like, no, you're taking away the wrong thing, man. I mean, that's not the thing that we're presenting you with. That's just some guy we hired to do a little, you know, acrobatic display of whatever behind us, you know? And if you're walking away talking about that, we're not doing our job right. So, but yeah, this feels totally different. And so I appreciate you saying that it matters, because I do think, you know, in hindsight, that we have taken a lot of wrong turns to get where we are.
And sometimes you have to. Again, if you get the luxury of a career, if you have the luxury of time as an artist, you're going to have those moments. Bob Dylan had to get through the 80s to finally get the Time Out of Mind, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a million different instances of this that I can go into. But...
And I, you know, listen, I contributed myself by, like, going on TV shows and doing this and just getting distraction and, like, you know, becoming, you know, the ink master guy and not the musician guy, you know, like, so the whole band would be in the airport and people would run up to me and go, you're the ink master guy. And they have no idea that there's music, that an episode of Ink Master goes away once you've seen it. But we have spent our lives working on music that's here forever. And they just don't even know that. I mean, I don't fault them for it, you know what I mean? But, like, but I, you know, I will take accountability for, you know, being one of the wrong turns, you know, along the way, you know, in addition to some of the collective wrong turns we've taken. And, you know, I think that we're all kind of on the same page about not repeating those mistakes.
Yeah. And if it had been perfect, though, the whole time, again, maybe that wouldn't have been as good. You got to make those turns.
Well, I think also like, you know, having a little bit of volatility remain within the band is what makes it feel original.
Sure. A little bit dangerous.
Because in the beginning, it was volatile. And right now, it gets volatile. Not all the time. Not like it used to.
But you're more mature, right?
We've grown up. We've let go of egos. We've let go of a lot of, like, little petty little bullshit. We've let go of, like, you know, who gets the spotlight or whatever. We, you know, all that shit that when you're a fucking, you know, a teenager, like, you really think matters. Like, we don't care about that shit. But we still clash in a lot of ways, you know, and more behind the scenes, really. Not even in on our entertainment level. But I think, you know, unfortunately, that component is a key magical piece to the formula of Jane's Addiction. You know, because if we are all going on jet skiing trips over the weekend together, I don't think you'd get the same show. You know what I mean?
No, however, it has to get here. Like I said, thank you for the gift of sound that you have provided.
Thank you, man.
My thanks to Dave Navarro. You can search deeper in this series and find one of my previous conversations with Dave as well. Thanks to you, of course, for checking out the episode. Before you get out, if you're not already, hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every week, three a week, new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And please do give the series a rating and leave a review as well. And then, of course, after that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. In fact, one of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from the Cranberries, Tracy Bonham, Katie Pruitt, the Ramones, Elvis Costello, Space, the Dandy Warhols, Suzanne Vega, Jeff Buckley, 10,000 Maniacs, Sunflower Bean, Gorillaz, Joni Mitchell, Ray LaMontagne, Barty Strange, Sylvanesso, Nine Inch Nails, The Offspring, Jack White, Replacements, Wang Chung, and my interview with actress Chloe Coleman as we talked about My Spy, The Eternal City. That's what you can hear when you tune in weeknights at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.